This season of Raised Sports is brought to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Memorial Cancer Fund. This is personal for me. Dominic Fouts, we called him Nick, was my cousin. He died of colon cancer in 2012 at the age of 34, and his sister Suzanne started this foundation in Nick's honor. We all know that the cost of cancer treatment is quite a burden, and that's what the Dom Fouts Fund does. It helps provide financial assistance to cancer patients and their families. So support the Dom Fouts Fund and help families deal with the costs of cancer treatment. For more information, go to domfoutsfund.org.
Yo, Paul, I want you to ask yourself one question. Who's the best player out here, and why am I?
In April of 2020, my father, Tim Harkins, died of cancer. This is a tribute to him. Episode 4, Humility.
So, Tim,
yeah.
Do you have any words of wisdom for me?
When Dad came home for hospice care, that one last week with all of us, we made sure he got a chance to have video calls with each of his 7 siblings. And I wanted to share this clip in particular. It's with his sister, my Aunt Cecilia. Her husband, my Uncle Gary, is also on the call, and my brother Paul and sister Allison are in the room. And in this one moment, Cecilia asks if he could share any wise words or life lessons with her. At first, he doesn't hear her, so Allison helps out.
I don't know if he heard you. Do you have words of wisdom for Cecilia?
Oh, for Cecilia?
Yeah.
Words of wisdom? Oh, man, I don't have any words of wisdom.
Then you can hear the deep voice of my Uncle Gary.
Don't mess up.
What?
Don't mess up.
Don't mess up. There you go.
And then my brother Paul drops a line, a saying, that Dad had often said.
Quicksand sucks?
Quicksand sucks, yeah.
Dad taught us a lot of lessons over the years. Sometimes they were perfectly sensible words of wisdom. Other times it took some work to figure out what in the world he was talking about. And sometimes they were both silly and made sense, like quicksand sucks. He was kind of like our own personal Yogi Berra.
Then over till it's over. When you come to the fork of the road, take it.
That's Berra, the former Hall of Fame catcher, discussing a couple of his famous sayings, or yogiisms as they were called, with MLB Network. One of my favorite was the one where he said, baseball is 90% mental, the other half is physical. Berra was known for using the English language in a way that was curious, puzzling, and genius all at once. Dad could do this, too.
He had so many good phrases. He would say to me often, don't put your feet up, you're not in a health spa.
I don't remember that one. I remember life isn't a bowl of enjoyment. Remember that one?
Life's not a bowl of enjoyment, heat-related fire. I mean.
This is my sister, Bridget.
There was one time where we were doing lines, of course. I feel like that's all we did in basketball practice was run lines. But one time, I think it was, I don't know if it was just me or the whole team, but we were moving slow. And he said something like, what are you doing out there, growing corn? Like, he just had so many weird phrases like that. And I remember looking at him across the court like, what? God, that's so embarrassing. What are you talking about?
One time, some of us were in the yard playing a game of wiffle ball, and Bridget, the youngest, had wanted to play. So basically, we threw her a bone. We gave her a couple of at-bats, and I think we let her play catcher. Obviously, she wasn't going to be happy with this arrangement, and so she complained to Dad, and he told us to let her actually play in the game, except he couldn't just say it in a normal way. He had to say, let Bridget be a part of the scoring apparatus. We'd often poke fun at Dad for these sayings of his, but it never bothered him. He knew it was silly. He'd just smile, a twinkle in his eye, and he'd say, words are my game. And this was true. Dad's sayings could be nonsensical, but they were also instructive, they were encouraging, and they could be motivational. And there was one in particular that we all heard some version of at one point or another, a saying that he borrowed from his dad. Paul remembers hearing it whenever Dad would drive him to one of his basketball games.
We'd pull in, and then he would turn off the car, and he'd go, Paul, I want you to ask yourself one question. Who's the best player out here, and why am I? And he just wanted me to be more confident, you know, and think of myself as the best player, or I have the ability to play with the best players.
Paul is now the men's cross-country coach and distance track coach at Yale, and he says he sometimes uses that line with his athletes. Who's the best runner out here, and why am I? Words were indeed Dad's game. There's an implication to the word humility that implies meekness or maybe subservience, but those things don't really have to go together. Humility is about having a modest view of your own importance, but it doesn't mean lacking confidence. That was certainly the case with Dad. He was comfortable talking to anyone at a party, but he didn't need to be the center of attention. He could espouse wisdom, but he never sought credit for it or took himself too seriously. You could see it and hear it during the final week Dad was at home with all of us, especially during those video calls. He would joke with people, he would needle them. You heard some of this in previous episodes. But when the focus turned squarely on him, when people started asking for wisdom or telling him how much he meant to them, or thanking him for things he had done for them, he would often turn the tables. He might reply with a geez, or oh man, or that's wonderful. And in the more emotional moments, he'd tear up and he'd ask, how'd I get so lucky? That was Dad's brand of humility, and it's a part of him that goes way back. Mom met Dad in the fall of 1965. They were freshmen at Gonzaga, and both of them worked at the campus dining hall, the COG. Dad worked in the dish room. Mom held down the dessert line. She remembers the pranks kids would play that she would have to deal with, like unscrewing the tops off the salt shakers and putting them upside down with the lid on top, so when she went to pick it up, the salt would spill all over. One time, someone removed all the tops off of the tables. Another time, the silverware just disappeared. She also remembers what Dad was like in those days, and her first impression was not the best. She was quiet, and he was different. She uses words like annoying and odd to describe what she thought of him in those days. And she says he was goofy, a little too goofy. Mom remembers Dad wearing a hat that had a monkey on top that would bob up and down when he walked. He also had clown shoes, which he gave as a gift to a foreign exchange student. He was a big beer drinker, too, and one time, she remembers, he chased after a flatbed truck because it had a keg perched on the back. But the more she got to know him, the more his goofy brand of humor, it grew on her. One time, they were in history class together, and it was a beautiful day outside, and Dad decided to leave, so he waited. And when the professor's back was turned, he climbed out the window. She thought that was hilarious, and she was starting to think that he was probably one of the funniest people she'd ever met. It was kind of fitting, then, that their first date was a Bill Cosby concert, though Dad's method of asking her out was unconventional. He told her that he had two tickets, and if she bought one of them, she could sit next to him. After she said no, that was when he revealed that he had been joking. There were some ups and downs in the following years. Mom said Dad would typically dump her right around Christmas break, which was also around her birthday. That hurt, but remembering back, she just says they were young and scared. Neither one of them had previously had a serious boyfriend or girlfriend. Regardless, they kept coming back to each other. They were engaged on October 20th of 1968, Dad's 21st birthday, and were married the following spring, just a few days after graduating from Gonzaga. After getting married, they moved to Western Washington, and Dad got a job in management at Kmart. I was born the following year, and that commitment to Mom and to starting a family led to a change in Dad, to kind of a shifting of his priorities. He never lost that sense of humor or that goofiness, but he definitely buckled down. Here's childhood friend Joe Staley.
He was not an intense student, but a change came over him, you know, after he had kids and he realized that, because he started off working at Kmart. I guess you remember that. You know those stories, yep. You know.
It wasn't long before Dad decided that Kmart just wasn't for him. He and Mom moved back to Spokane, and Dad returned to school to pursue an MBA. Then while doing that, he changed his mind again and he applied to law school. Mom wasn't sure that he'd get in since his college grades were just mediocre. But she says he got straight A's in the MBA program, and that probably led to his acceptance into Gonzaga Law School. Meanwhile, while this was going on, the family continued to grow. Allison was born in 1974, when I was 3 and a half. Then Katie came the year after. It was a juggling act in those days. Mom would work a swing shift at Sacred Heart Hospital. Dad would go to night school, then work the graveyard shift at a warehouse. He'd hustle through his duties as quickly as he could so that he could use the extra time to study. Then he'd come home and go to sleep around 7 a.m. until he had to get up and do it all over again. When Mom would get off work at the hospital, she'd wake us up so we could drive the babysitter home. They did this for about a year and a half. Once Dad earned that law degree, it was time to take the bar. He was intent on passing on his first try, so he left us for 7 weeks to live with my Aunt Kathleen and Uncle Dave to study in peace and quiet under his sister's watchful eye.
We had a split-level house, and he had the lower level. You know, we gave him that, even though it wasn't totally finished off. But so we had a table set up where he, you know, was studying, and there was a bed down there for him. And he'd come upstairs to eat, you know, it'd be lunchtime or something, and he'd come up and he'd have lunch with me. And we'd kind of sit and we'd be chatting, and all of a sudden I'd go, Tim, you need to get back downstairs to study. The poor guy. I was so hard on him. Every once in a while, David would tell me to lighten up. He's got to be studying. But, you know, why I was like that, I don't know, except that I do remember, I kept thinking about, your mom was at home, and all she was sacrificing so that he could be over there in a quiet place studying to take the bar exam. But really, it was, I do remember the time actually fondly because, you know, I remember sometimes in the evenings after he had been studying all day, been to whatever class he had to go to and had been studying, and that we'd sit and talk and, you know, just chat about whatever, nothing, hang out. And I enjoyed the chance to do that as an adult because all my childhood was spent hanging out with him. So it was nice as an adult to be able to spend some time with him.
Dad passed the bar and would embark on a long career as a lawyer. And that goofball who climbed out the window of his college classroom had forever set an example for all of us about the value of sacrifice and hard work. Here's my sister Allison, who followed Dad's footsteps in becoming a lawyer.
I had to work full time and go to school at night. And I always thought, oh, this is so hard. But then I thought, Dad worked full time, went to law school and had 3 kids. So if he could do that, I can do this. I don't have a family to worry about. I don't have kids to worry about. So he was kind of my inspiration to get through the stressful times in law school.
Dad had transitioned from college goofball to a responsible family man. But he never lost that silly sense of humor, and he never took himself too seriously. He remained confident in his own skin, yet humble. And I can think of 2 stories in particular that illustrate that. One came when my brother Paul was in high school. Now, before Paul devoted himself to running full time, he also played basketball. And one summer, he tried out for the AAU team that was made up of the 2 big schools on the South Hill, Ferris and Lewis and Clark. Ferris was always good under their legendary coach, Wayne Gilman. And at that time in the mid-90s, LC was also good. They had a kid named Mike Homer, a guard who would end up playing college basketball at Lafayette. And Paul got cut from that team. It didn't help that he had missed the first couple days of tryouts, but he managed to get onto another team that was made up of basically the cast-offs, the guys who'd been cut. Predictably, this team was not very good, and Paul says his coach, while a nice guy, he didn't really have a strong hold on basketball strategy.
We were two or three games into the season, and I asked our coach, I go, so coach, when are we going to learn your offense? And he goes, offense? He goes, you're the point guard. He goes, you bring the ball down, and you either pass or shoot. I was like, all right.
So that was the atmosphere he was in. And Dad would drive Paul and some of his teammates to all of his practices and games. He'd sit and quietly watch all of it from the bleachers. And then one game.
We were getting destroyed by this one team. I think they beat us like 99-33 or something like that. and our coach got pretty upset. So he got like three technicals somehow and got tossed out of the game and suspended for the next one.
The team didn't have an assistant. So Dad was asked to fill in for the next game, which just so happened to be against the team that had cut Paul, the team that had Mike Homer. Dad accepted the challenge, and because he had been to all the practices, he knew the players. He knew their strengths, their weaknesses, and because he had gone to a lot of the Ferris games and the LC games, he knew the other team pretty well, too. And so he devised a plan. And he asked the team to play a box-and-one defense on Homer. And what that means is four players play a zone defense and one player plays man-to-man on the other team's star, just follows him everywhere. And Dad had it working.
We got to halftime against this team that we were all cut from, and we were beating them at halftime, and they like didn't know what the hell was going on. You know? And they ended up coming back and beating us, but it was, you know, I mean, we lost the week before 99-33, and then Dad had us up on the team we all got cut from, you know, at halftime, and just because he knows what he's doing, and he's crafty and smart and and all of that.
Later, in a bit of a backhanded compliment, Paul told Dad that he could probably be a pretty good junior varsity coach.
And he was like, a really good JV coach, huh, Paul? I was like, well, you know, I don't know if you're Gilman, but yeah, you're good. In reality, if he spent the time that Wayne Gilman did, he probably could. You know, I mean, he was a student of the game, and you know, and he knew what he was doing. He knew he was smart, but he also had enough respect of my friends, you know, and my teammates that. Just because he would drive him to practice every week and stuff like that, that he got us to do what he wanted to do, and we gave him a good run for that one game. I was kind of disappointed that he wasn't like at least an assistant coach after that. He was just went back to the bleachers essentially, you know.
I don't recall Dad ever talking about that game. He didn't make a big deal of it. He didn't complain about not getting another chance to coach. I probably never would have even heard about that story if Paul hadn't told me. There's something else I never knew about, and it involved why Dad wanted to become a lawyer. I knew that he wanted to provide for his family, but recently Mom told me something else. She said that he did it because he wanted to help people. He never voiced how he planned to do that, but he told her, "That's all I really want to do. That's why I want to go into law." And looking back, you could see that he did. He helped out plenty of relatives with legal issues, from divorces to custody cases to wills, whatever it might be. One longtime friend, Dave Hughes, shares a story.
Yeah, I called him for some legal advice. I was going through a divorce, and I called him just for some advice. And he gave me really good advice. You know, he said, you know, make it about the importance of your family. And so that advice, you know, was something that he would typically say, and I certainly would have expected him to say it. And so the advice, you know, that he gave me worked out great, and I'm glad I took it.
And if clients couldn't pay, Dad rarely sent collectors after them. He'd let it go or work things out. He'd often barter or exchange services. That's how we might have ended up with a new set of tires for the car, or a side of beef in the freezer, or one time, an old camper in the driveway. Dad never really talked about any of this. He never asked us what we were doing to help people or preached that we should do so. He just did it. He led by example and passed it on to us. Here's Bridget talking about doing just that with her daughter Lucy.
I tell Lucy, I said, I just want you every day to be a good person. I want you to be nice. I want you to work hard. And I want you to, you know, be friendly to other people. And I, after Dad died, I remember talking to her and saying, we need to live more like Papa. We need to not judge other people. We need to not worry about stupid little things that don't matter. You know, I said he spent his whole life being nice and helpful and working hard, and he helped anybody out.
This brings us back to April, and Dad with us in the room, talking to my Aunt Cecilia and Uncle Gary, giving words of wisdom.
Quicksand sucks?
Yeah, oh boy. Boy. Yeah, quicksand sucks, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Well, just do your best. Don't mess up. Do your best.
Yeah. We'll try.
Do your best. Try hard.
Life is not a bowl of enjoyment. Quicksand sucks. But do your best and try hard. Who's the best and why am I? That was Dad. Words were his game. Words of wisdom, brilliant in their simplicity, delivered with humor, and always with humility. This episode was written and produced by me, Bob Harkins. Special thanks to Paul Harkins, Allison Lauritsen, Cecilia and Gary Shoemate, Bridget Porter, Joe Staley, Kathleen Keeney, and Dave Hughes for taking part in this episode. And also to my mom for everything. The theme song comes from Corbin Kites. Other music by Emmett Fenn, Chris Haugen, Letterbox, and the 126ers. This season of Raised Sports comes to you in partnership with the Dominic Fouts Cancer Fund. For more information, go to domfoutsfund.org. Raised Sports is a proud member of the Storyhanger Podcast Network.